This is Rob Saylor, Director of the Lilly Endowment Clergy Renewal Programs at Christian Theological Seminary. In our podcast series, we'll be sitting down with folks who have been friends of the program, who have benefited from the programs, or who have wisdom to share for congregations and pastors who are seeking renewal opportunities. We are very much looking forward to hearing their insights and are very glad that you've joined us for this conversation series. Today we'll be talking with Reverend Marty Wright, who is pastor of Ogleville Christian Church in Columbus, Indiana, and who also serves on the faculty of Christian Theological Seminary. Marty, in addition to being a recipient of clergy renewal grants himself, has spent a long time thinking about how to encourage congregations to support their pastors in this work of renewal, and is going to be sharing both his own experiences and tips for the journey with us today. Hello, everyone. This is Rob Saylor, Director of the Lilly Endowment Clergy Renewal Programs, and we are very glad this morning to have a chance to sit down with Pastor Marty Wright. Marty, thanks so much for coming by today.
Thanks for inviting me to be on the show. I'm glad to be a part of it, Rob.
So Marty, you've actually had two clergy renewal leaves, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what you did, what you and your family did, and also the congregational elements of it, and how it benefited you and your ministry.
To start with, right, this is an opportunity to do something that you've always dreamed of, right? That's what makes it so awesome. It's not just about like checking off a bucket list thing, but it's really about imagining and dreaming. And that's what really feels our passions and excites us. And all my life, I've been a big fan of C.S. Lewis. I've loved those stories since my childhood. And so when I had the first chance to do a sabbatical leave, it was really important to me to do something around that. And I thought, you know, while certainly there are some spiritual themes in the writings of C.S. Lewis, I wasn't sure in the beginning if that was going to be, you know, something acceptable, but of course it turned out that that was just right exactly in the ballpark of what this grant's about. So I built a program around C.S. Lewis and walking in his footsteps. And so that was exciting for my children. At that time I had children in junior high and elementary school. They loved the stories as well. So we actually went to his home, his birthplace in Ireland. Then we went, of course, to Oxford, stayed at the Kilns. Traveled around Oxford a number of places, heard speakers, just a number of things related to the C.S. Lewis story. Of course, that all culminated for me when I was staying at the Kilns in the room with the wardrobe, or at least with a wardrobe in C.S. Lewis's house. And I've said this before, but while I tried to get in and go to Narnia, it didn't work for me. But I have my own kind of Narnia experience, and the grant really made that all possible and accessible. And so just real quick on a personal note, I mean, it was a chance to do something I kind of always dreamed of. The second sabbatical was about the life of Francis of Assisi, someone who I've always admired for his ability to give up earthly wealth in service to God. The second sabbatical that we took focused on a trip to Italy. It was, of course, 8 years later, and my children were older, and a chance to experience a lot of things in that way. And there are more stories to tell, but those were the centerpieces of where we traveled. Now, as far as the church goes, how the church responded, I'd served the church for 7 years before the first sabbatical, and the church had gone from really being in a time of decline to having first plateaued and then began to grow. And we had a good relationship with our congregation. We were in a very healthy place. And I think that's important to these things working and thriving. And the congregation and I were in a good place. And they were glad to have a pastor that was going to go away but come back. And they'd seen too many that had gone away and not come back. And so that was real positive for the church and for us. They were happy to give us the chance to take the sabbatical. And they were excited, the first one especially, they were very excited about the opportunity. And it kind of was a real positive thing that they made the newspaper in a positive way. There were a lot of good things that happened. And I've always joked about this, but when I went on that first sabbatical, the leadership was motivated. We'd started to grow as a church, and they were motivated, highly motivated to keep that happening. And they worked so hard while I was gone that the church just continued to grow even in my absence. And so when I came back, they really gave me a hard time about, well, maybe we don't have to have a pastor here. We can grow. But anyway, so the first experience was just marvelous as far as that mm-hmm. goes and those sorts of things.
And then I think you've told me in the past, when it came time for your second renewal leave, the congregational response took a different form and things went a little differently while you were away
when
you came back.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I came back from the first sabbatical. And as I said, the church had been growing, and we just, the next 7 years after the first sabbatical were phenomenal. I know that results may vary for other people, but for mm-hmm. us and for our context, the next 7 years, the church just exploded with growth. And we had all worked as a church just incredibly hard during those 7 years. And so the second time that we went on sabbatical, when we went away, the whole church took a sabbatical. And everyone needed a break and a rest. I actually think they were glad to have me gone for a while because they could slow the pace down. And we did. And so when I came back the second time, we'd seen a lot of people that had taken, they didn't quit coming to church, but people who came 4 weeks every month started coming three during that time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. People came three, came two. And so the numbers were down a little bit. And there was some concern about what was going to happen when I got back in September. But, you know, what was incredible is after we had all taken that breath and we had all kind of moved through that space, the church had the greatest single quarter of growth we'd ever had. And whatever losses had occurred, the church more than made up for those. And it finished being the largest and best attended year in the history of the church to that point. And that was pretty incredible. So even though the summer had been not what I'd hoped for, and things, everyone had really taken a break during that summer. It was actually probably a well-earned break, and everyone was just needing to catch their breath. So that sabbatical, I think the whole church took one, not just me. We all got a chance to rest a little bit and to renew ourselves. And when we came back, man, and since that time, the last 8 years have just been, it's just been a whirlwind. It's been phenomenal.
I just love setting those two stories next to each other. And in this case, two stories from the same congregation, because I think they both illustrate different facets of how this benefit can play out for congregations. Because in the first renewal leave, you have a situation that I think is pretty common where when the pastor steps away, a lot of people in the congregation step up and work a little harder and fill those roles. And oftentimes in the process, discover gifts and aptitudes and passions that they may not have had a chance to discover before because the pastor was functioning in that right. role. And that's one set of goods. And we hear a lot of those stories. But in a way, I'm even more intrigued by the second leave where, you know, we all know that in many congregations, what do they say? It's 10% of the people doing 80% of the work. We lean heavily on our volunteer labor, especially. And to have the system sort of collectively decide without a lot of intentionality, well, okay, this is the chance for the total system to rest and for the people that do a lot of the heavy lifting to rest in such a way that when you come back together, you're even stronger. I just think those two things together are stunning.
It was exciting, and I'm glad the story turned out the way it did. Let me say that for a lot of reasons. And that's why, so our congregation has a real love of this program, not just for us. I think our elders have spoken with the leaders of other churches. Our staff members that have participated in the program are just frequent advocates for the program because it does renew the minister, and it's powerful for what it does for the minister. But if you, the members of the church, after you come back, and they almost every time they say, you know, before you left, you know, we had this energy, we liked how you did things, but boy, since you've been back, there's just this real new passion or this new energy, and people pick up on that. And I've experienced that each time that we came back, and for other staff too. It's just a real shot in the arm. For us, it's just been nothing but positive. We don't really have any big negative story that is out there about these experiences. We have had the very positive portion, but I will say this, we've done a pretty good job at making sure that the congregation was aware of what was happening mm-hmm. and working with our people on these. And so when we've been successful in getting them, it's not just the minister that kind of feels the success, but the whole church had a part in it. And I think that's an important reason for why ours have been overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, you talked about how nice it is for a congregation to have a pastor step away for a time, but then knowing that the pastor will come back. You know, if there's not policy or a practice of sabbatical, of renewal leaves in place, then really if the pastor comes to the point of needing to step away and regroup, then that probably is going to mean leaving the congregation and having some time in between pastoral calls. So when it comes to the longevity of a pastoral tenure and the energy of a pastoral tenure, that really is a major part of what these programs are about. And then, yeah, I think we sometimes do hear stories of when renewal leaves, whether they're ours or through another program, when they do go wrong. And when they go wrong, it's almost always because something went wacky in the communication between the pastor and the congregation, right? The congregation really just was not as on board or didn't feel the ownership of the experience.
I think that's right. You know, the people in the church should be able to know and be able to articulate, I mean, I feel like anyway, where the pastor is going, why they're going, what's happening here. And if there's good understanding of that, you know, at least in our setting, at least, they've been excited. A lot of the people may never get the chance to go to places, and they kind of vicariously just enjoy knowing that, hey, this is something good. Our church, someone from our church is getting this opportunity to be blessed. And we've just found people to be very supportive. In 23 years that we've been connected to the program or have known of the program and the things that have gone on, we've really never had any negative responses from our people. A few people on the way have had questions about, you know, what's this program connected to or who's behind it. But they've just been, when they find out the details, they've been overwhelmingly supportive of it. One of the things I just personally, on a personal note, what I love about it is ministry is so hard on our families because we're on call 24/7, 365, you know, and I mean that not in this, in a sense of how burdensome it is, but because we care about the people that are in our church, even if it's Christmas Day, right, and something comes up that's pretty big, we're going to try to attend to that because the people, we care about them. The loser, so to speak, if you would, in that sometimes is our family, right? They get the short end of the stick because we abandon them to go out and deal with someone else in their crisis sometimes. And so what was awesome for me in both of the adventures was the chance to really reconnect with family. And I think it helped mitigate some of the damage that can happen to pastors' families. And for us, there were just some key moments. The first one, when my children were small and young or younger, it was awesome. We were on this whirlwind road trip across Europe and C.S. Lewis sites. And that meant staying a lot of times at bed and breakfast or at hotels. And when we were at hotels, of course, we had the kids are in one bed and my wife and I are in the other. And it was just these, almost like that old show, The Waltons, right?
Where we're very cozy.
Yeah, it was very much that way. But what was neat about that is that actually after doing that for a week, we were in Rugby, England, and just really some really great dynamic conversations that I don't think would have ever been accessed with our kids until they were adults if we hadn't had that kind of a place where we were together and people could share their hopes and their dreams and their fears. And so for us, these moments really strengthened our family in profound ways. That was what was so awesome for me most of all, is that it's something that I got to share that was ministry related, but was also something that my family could share with me. And for my kids, they of course, they're all like, hey, when are you going to try this again? They very much appreciated the whole experience. I think that's something that's important, especially for pastors that have families and children. They need to be old enough, I think, to enjoy what you're doing and be good travel partners. But if they can do that, man, it's a life-changing family event.
I think we've heard that from a number of folks over the years that, you know, on the surface, when people are planning this out, they're thinking, okay, travel, you know, these kind of big ticket bucket list items. But in terms of the enduring impact, oftentimes, you know, we spoke with Mike Mather the other day, and he was talking about just the transformative impact of sitting down and eating meals together as a family for right. 6 months during the leave. It's those kinds of things, or these hotel room conversations that wouldn't have happened in the normal day-to-day rhythm of ministry and family life. Those are the things that really give impact in life over the long term.
So we started a family tradition there. Now, I know families of other people do this, but we had never been a family that did pajama days where you stay in your pajamas all day and just spend time playing games and doing things. And because we were too ambitious on the first one and we were too busy a schedule, we had to stop and regroup in the middle. And I remember that when we had this rule the first time that ever happened, where, okay, all that we're doing today is ordering in room service. We're going to watch movies. We're going to play games. I know in the post-COVID world, a lot of us have done that a lot. That was actually really neat. It's just, I think, and that's what this is about, right? It's not just about all the going. It's also about the stopping. It's about the pausing and reflecting and resting. And the second time we did that more intentionally, which was, I think, an important piece of the equation. To not be so hectic and frenetic and find more rest in what we were doing. One of my favorite stories about the first leave, we also went to Canada. And just as an aside, one of the things I think is awesome about this, right? So things that you love to do or your dream of doing. I dreamt of catching a big fish and, of course, went to Canada and had the chance to catch some big fish. I had dreamt about all these different things, C.S. Lewis or walking in the paths of Francis of Assisi. And just that was wish fulfillment, right? That's almost like part of what happened. But one of my favorite events is there are these unexpected moments, things that happen that you would never have dreamt or expected it to be that way. And up in Canada one morning, I got up really, really early in the morning and went out in the water by myself, which might not be the safest thing to do. And it's about 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning, but it was pretty daylight already up there, starting to be daylight. And as I was on the water, the eagles are flying over my head. It's this beautiful, it's just this, the water is like glass. It's just a serene moment. And I'm not a singer. I'm not good at that. But I just felt overwhelmed. I start singing in the boat. And I think I'm on the water, of course, all by myself. And I have this great outdoor, I think it's a personal private moment, just me and God. And after about 15 minutes of that, I hear a boat start up around the corner. And the guy's really upset that there's this maniac out singing in the middle of the lake. Those are those kinds of moments that happen in this thing that you can't plan them, you can't predict them, but man, they're fun memories that come out of it. And I've had things like that all along, both of the journeys. And those are also really great parts of the thing. The unplanned part of your sabbatical is sometimes the best part.
Now, Marty, you've touched on a couple of things already when it comes to what advice you might give to pastors, to congregations that are either deciding whether or not to pursue this, or if they've decided to pursue it, how do they go about constructing the leave? You've talked about congregational buy-in being a crucial element. You've talked about this dynamic between high energy periods, but also periods of rest. Are there other pieces of advice that you would give either to congregations that are just beginning to consider this possibility or to ones that are committed to it and are wondering how best to put it all together?
So everybody's situation is different. And as our church was growing along the way, what was needed for the church was different in each of the occasions. So that first sabbatical, we used you can allocate up to $15,000 for the church to help cover the expenses of guest speakers and to do some things with your congregation. And one of the things, we were a smaller church the first time, and we allocated a portion of the funds to take the whole church on a retreat down at Spring Mill Inn in Southern Indiana. And I wasn't a part of that. I was overseas at the time, but the church got to go do this event together. That was one of the things when I came back, and to this day, people still talk about, even now 14 years later, 15 years later, they still talk about that trip. And so I think one piece of advice is if your church is of a size that you can really manage some creative things to be done with that $15,000. I really encourage people to think creatively about that, because in that way, it didn't just benefit me personally and my family, but it really had a neat benefit for the church. Now, the second time, we were too large that wouldn't have covered the cost of the whole church doing something. So we did different things with the church, but I really do think that that's a big piece, is use that portion well if you choose to do that. And I know it's not required, but for us, I've used that to great effect with the church, and I've really appreciated that. So that'd be one thing, is consider that. You know, how can you leverage this to really help the pastor and the church?
Yeah, and again, it speaks to the ways in which a lot of your best stories around this, in addition to being these unplanned moments on your part, it's also the congregation and you discovering new facets of your life together. And as you've indicated, you've been at that church now, I believe you said 23 years.
Yeah, and I don't think that, you know, if we don't have those breaks in there, I'm not sure we make 23 years. You know, that those are important moments of catching our breath. And I would say that, you know, at the 13 week point, it's really telling, because both times, at least for me, I was ready to come back, and I was excited about coming back. It wasn't like I got to the end and like, oh no, I have to go back. I was really anxious to get back, and had this sense of hey, we've got more things to accomplish. And so at least for me personally, that was definitely, that was the energizing piece, and it kept me there, right? It's kept me connected to the church. And so I'm not saying that it's the total panacea that just solves all the problems. I don't mean it that way, but it certainly offered me something that I think contributed to longevity.
Marty, I want to thank you. You know, you've talked about these programs blessing your ministry, but certainly you and your ministry have blessed these programs. So thank you very much for your wisdom this morning and blessings on your work during this crazy season of ministry.
You too.
All right. Well, blessings.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you for joining us for this conversation about clergy renewal. Support for our podcast series comes from Lilly Endowment Incorporated. Our producers are Jessica Mesman and Cassidy Hall, and our theme music is composed by Father Joel David Weir. If you'd like to find out more about clergy renewal, please check out our website at www.lillyclergyrenewal.org, and we look forward to hearing from you.